And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Bad news, girls. The good news is your dates are here.
What's the bad news?
They're dead.
Ah!
See, a United States astro robot becomes a creature of death.
Oh. And Dave.
We have come here to this planet for one purpose only, to acquire breeding stuff to repopulate our planet.
He who breaks the law shall be punished. Back to the house of pain. Back to the house of pain.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Bots, Bugs, and Babes, the B-Movie Podcast. From class to the cult, to the cheese in between, the movies are baby, the entertainment is grade A. And I am your host, Mr. Jason Giaconetti. And I'm joined today, not by my dad, but by a special guest, Mr. John LeMay. John, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Jason, thanks for having me on today.
Oh, it's a pleasure to have you on. And then, you know, so folks, normally we're here on Bots, Bugs, and Babes. We're talking about B-Movies. We talk about, you know, movies, you know, I mean, as recent as like, you know, 2018, we go back all the way, you know, back to the 30s and the 20s and stuff like that. But today we're here to talk about a book because John is an author, and John has actually written several books that I own. But we're here to talk about his newest book, which is Kong Unmade, The Lost Films of Skull Island. But before we talk about that, John, I thought maybe we give the listeners a little bit of your background, you know, because obviously if you're writing books about King Kong and you know, kaiju films and stuff like that, you like the same stuff that our listeners like. So.
Oh yeah, you know, I mean, it's a funny thing. You know, I like Kong, I like Godzilla, I like Hammer movies. I saw you did a Hammer podcast not too long ago, mm-hmm. So I run the gamut, kind of the same as you guys.
Yeah, and you know, the great part is that here, obviously, you know, the on Bots, Bugs, and Babes, we did our Kong last year for the 85th anniversary. And we've talked about how influential Kong, obviously, you know, Willis O'Brien and stuff like that with Ray Harryhausen. And if Ray Harryhausen is the grandfather of special effects, then Obi is the great grandfather of all, you know, movie special effects kind of thing. And we talk about that a lot here, showing appreciation for the guys who, you know, pioneered those techniques and stuff. So, you know, I know, you know, again, having I read the Lost Kaiju film book. I was reading through it. I haven't finished it yet. Again, I'm almost about halfway through the Kong book. My question is this: is, you know, what? I mean, obviously, there's a ton of work that goes into researching these books. So can you give us a kind of idea, like the process of how you go about like creating one of these books?
Sure. Well, first of all, you know, I basically write books that I want to read. You know, it's a book that I wished existed and I wish someone smarter than me would write. And since nobody does it, I just kind of took it upon myself to do The Lost Films, which is about mostly Godzilla and Gamera movies and actually a few King Kong movies that they didn't make in Japan. And that was tough because I had to do the research was in Japanese. So you would scan the Japanese pages. You would use OCR, you know, which means you rip the Japanese text off the page. You run that through a translator and you get really broken, horrible translation and you kind of sort it out. And so that was The Lost Films. You know, that was pretty hard to write. So when it came to this King Kong book, it was a lot easier because I could actually just go and get English sources for a change, which was really nice. And actually, most of it came from Brigham Young University and the Marion C. Cooper papers. And so, yeah, that was very nice. You know, like I said, this book was a walk in the park compared to the other book because the research had to be done, you know, in Japanese.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you this is, and folks, those of you obviously, you know, who have been longtime listeners here know that Dad and I have talked about several different books. We talked about like the Ray Harryhausen scrapbook. We've talked about the King Kong. What is it? I forget. Something to Jackson that was like the big one.
Oh yeah, by Ray Morton. It's King Kong from Faye Ray to Peter Jackson. Yeah.
I mean, we've talked about a few of those, and we talked about some of the other books, especially during like the 70s. I want to say it was like the late 60s, early 70s. My dad had a lot of these books that were it was like classic monsters or whatever, or like it was like the history of the horror movie or whatever. Like it was all these books, these oversized coffee table books that as a kid, my brother and I would pore over all those pictures and all that stuff. And we just knew them inside and out. But those kind of things, like we read through them now as an adult, you're like, oh, there's a lot of good information in here. And it was funny because that kind of stuff at the time, like that was how you found out about some of these movies. You know, because there was no, in the mid 70s, even then, I mean, it wasn't readily, you didn't have, you know, the ability to just have movies at your fingertips. You know what I'm saying? And it wasn't until like the 80s, obviously, with the VHS boom and, you know, video stores and stuff like that, where, you know, VHS players weren't as readily available in everyone's house. You know, I remember people renting them and stuff like that. I don't know. What your experience was with that, but I mean, my dad was a very early on. He adopted VHS, and we were a very early VHS family. So we were the house where everyone's like, "Do you have that movie, Jay? Like, I want to come over." Like, people wanted to come over to our house because they're like, "We want to watch this," and like, "Well, we don't," and like, and they didn't have a VCR. We had the movies. We had all that stuff. So it's one of those things that growing up, you know, those books were always really important. And now, obviously, you know, information is so readily available at your fingertips. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you think about it, in our pockets, we have more technology than they used to put a man on the moon. You know what I'm saying? You know? So I think now sometimes when we see people might take for granted, like a book, like maybe the Kong book or even the Kaiju book or whatever, and they're like, oh, well, that must be really easy to do. I'm like, well, there's a lot of work that goes into these things. Like, it's not just you just show up and it happens. You know what I'm saying? And
and my policy too when I did the Lost Films was I said I didn't want to do everything that you could already find on the internet. I wanted to only do it if I could dig up stuff that wasn't on the internet yet. You know, and it's even the same for this Kong stuff. Sure. Even though it's in English, nobody's really published a lot of what's in the Marion C. Cooper papers or dug into it, because there's some fascinating stuff in there.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, just the even the when, because so I'll give you an idea, folks, of what's in here. Even though the it's called Kong Unmade, and I love that title, you know, I kind of think it catches your eye. It actually popped up. I want to say I was on Facebook. And I was scrolling through and someone had shared, I guess, the Amazon link, and it just says Kong Unmade. And I'm like, and we're going back. Like, I stopped scrolling, and I'm not a huge, I'm on Facebook because, you know, it's part of what it is. And I mean, to me, it allows me to, you know, communicate with a lot of the model producers and my friends who are artists and stuff like that, because in reality, you know, I mean, I don't know. I mean, it just is the way it is. I don't live near a lot of these people. You know what I'm saying? I might get to see them once a year, you know, at Jersey Fest. Like, we may get together for 4 days and it's like an awesome 4 days, but the other 361 days a year, we don't see each other. You know what I'm saying? So it's a way to keep in touch that way. So to get me to stop, okay, that you caught my eye, you know, and then the best is that the title caught my eye, the way it was written. I'm like, oh, I love that. That font was like, that font looks familiar. And the back of your book, the very Crestwood, listeners know this, is went to Catholic school my whole life. And in our library, we had two sets of the Crestwood orange books, right? You know, we were told you could take one of those out, but the next week you're not allowed to take out, we had to take a different book out. So you would bide your time going, oh man, this is the week I get to take out. please let Godzilla be there. Please let the Wolfman be there. And you just prayed that you had early library and that whoever had, and then that the other ones were returned and you could get your chance. Cause if that was your week to take one out and it wasn't there, you're like, no, I need to get it, you know? But it, you caught my eye with that for sure. And, I know there are the Crestwood books, the orange ones especially hold a dear place in my heart and a lot of people, you know, of the right age, you know what I'm saying? It holds that place there. I mean, obviously, I mean, you read those when you were younger, I'm assuming.
Same exact experience. Yeah. Even, you know, I was born in 1985, but they still had those Crestwood books in our school library and they were worn, you know, and pages were yellowed, but oh yeah, I even made a photocopy of the Godzilla book when I was younger.
Oh,
because you know I didn't know where you would buy that book. You know,
what a great idea! I can be honest with you is I'm a little older than you. I was born in 78, and my brother was 80, so we're not that much different in age. You know what I'm saying? How many years ago was this now? I was trying to purchase them and you can go and I'm on Amazon and eBay and places you can find them here and there. And some of them get a little outrageous, like $300 to $400 for one of those books in really good shape. And it gets a little insane. And I'm like, I have to be okay with it. And the completist in me finds it very hard to not have all of them, but I was like, I have to be okay with this. But I was trying to piece together an orange set and then the purples. Now I didn't even know the purples existed till I was older.
Oh, I didn't know until just now there were purple sets.
Oh, okay. Well, yes, the purples are, and the purples to me are, I mean, again, it's like the season two, you know what I'm saying? Like they're good. And I love them, like Ghost of Frankenstein and stuff like that in there, but they're not the originals, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And, it was funny because I was kind of piecing them together here and there. My dad was trying to help me. And then my dad spent an entire year, going and purchasing through eBay and stuff on Amazon, whatever. He bought me, he had this giant box. And usually when I have a big, heavy box at Christmas, it's a model, you know, like maybe a 1-to-1 head or like, I'm like, this is going to be a model. So I always open it last because that's the model at the end. And it's the entire, so he had a complete set. It took him a year. I don't want to know how much he spent. I literally don't want to know how much he spent. It took him a year. And I go, how did you do this? He goes, oh, I have packages coming all the time. And the packages that are coming are not from anywhere. He's buying them from England, Germany, Japan. Like he scoured the world to find these because, again, some of the books are really hard to find. And it's funny because when I saw the lettering and I saw the back cover, it immediately has a sense reaction, like, oh my God, like the Crestwood books. And like, I have them they're in a case, like a bin with a locked top, like a clasped top. Like I have the full set in there. I actually have other individual books that I've bought my daughter over, my daughter's 8. And I like for herself to have her own like one-offs of whatever. Like she wanted the Bride of Frankenstein, which is the one of the purple books. Well, that took a little while, but I tracked one down for her and tracked one out. And to her, like, she's like, these are great. Let's read it together, you know, kind of thing. So she wants to read them together. But I have my entire set there, and it's just so crazy. Like, it's that sense memory and, like, that feeling of nostalgia that I think might be – I mean, I think we're of a generation where that stuff was important because – and, again, I don't know for sure, but I'm assuming since you were a child of the 80s, you know, even the mid 80s into the early 90s, you played with toys, actually played with them.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. You actually played with toys, not put that on a shelf and don't touch it. You know, they're, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, to my daughter, you know, she's in the mindset of like, I want to play with these. Like she has her wrestlers and her guys and she has her Godzilla figures. You know, whether they be from the new Godzilla, you know, that legendary made or the vinyls, that the Bandai vinyls or even Ultraman vinyls from Japan that I've bought, you know, sometimes you can get them real cheap. You know, the ones with, what do they call those? Not pops. What do they call? I'm trying to remember they're about the size of like the smaller Bandai Godzillas and they work perfectly with them, but they have the little pull tags on them. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Get those things. And she loves those things. And that I think a lot of the generation's missing that, you know, kind of thing. They want to play video games. They want to play with toys. You know, they want to engage their minds and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And it was great to see that. And I'm going to guarantee you that when people see this, when people see the stuff, if they click on the link, because I'm going to put the link right in the show notes, I want people to go check this out. They're going to be like, oh man, I remember this. And it makes that memory come back, you know, and I think that was a great idea. And then once you open the book, folks, I'll be honest with you, because again, I've been reading on the Kindle and I have the hard copy of the book. I have the hard copy sitting right here. On the Kindle, it doesn't have the pictures. The hard copy has the pictures in it, and the pictures are outstanding. Just the poster art and the different things that you've included really make those stories come. I mean, I've actually read some stuff and I got to go back and read it in the book. You know, I go back to the actual, and to me also holding a book is more kind of that, you know, I mean, don't get me wrong. I read on the Kindle cause it's convenient, but like holding a book takes you back to, you know what I'm saying? You know,
I want to throw it out there too, that if you buy the print book, you get the Kindle free on Amazon. That's something they let me decide and set up. And that's also kind of why I priced the Kindle version. It's pretty cheap, and it's just because, honestly, I don't know how to get the pictures in there. I'm not that savvy with Kindle yet, so it's you know, the Kindle version is pretty cheap. But again, you know, I think you're better off to buy the book, then you get the Kindle for free anyways.
Yeah. Well, and I'll be honest with you, that's one of the things I never even – like I looked at it and I said, okay, well, I'm definitely going to buy – I was going to purchase the actual book itself because I love just – It sounds weird, folks, but just like when you're holding just physically holding a book, the feel of the paper in your hands, like it, if you're of a certain age, that brings back a certain memory, you know what I'm saying? It's kind of like, for those of us, again, we talk about being from New York, and we talk, my dad from the Bronx and stuff like that. So we talk about like being from the Bronx. My dad always talked about, you know, when you would go to the theater when he was a kid and it would cost a quarter and you would see, you know, 10 cartoons and 2 movies and maybe a third movie, whatever, you know, like he talks about that stuff where you could smell the popcorn in the street. You smell the popcorn popping. You smell like it was the sitting in those seats. Like it was all those memories that it brings back. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
All those sense memories. That's part of this too. That's part of the great part about, to me, why I think Dad and I love doing, you know, what we do, and why like have my brother on, or I had like my buddy Jonathan Inbody on the other, you know, several times this year. And we were, when you're ever, you know, you kind of had that sense memory. It's like, oh, it makes you feel, I don't want to say safe, but it's like, it's one of those things. It's one of those nice feelings. It's like, oh, it feels good in a world where you have a lot of like, garbage happening every day, everywhere, you know what I'm saying? Those little things that don't seem like they're much, but it's kind of like, to me, it's like, you know, on Thanksgiving when you smell the turkey cooking, you know, or the pumpkin pie or whatever, it brings back a memory, you know, and maybe my memory of the Thanksgiving when I smell that, maybe I'm thinking of, you know, a guy sitting in, you know, in a theater with 2 little robots making fun of a movie, you know, because of, you know, Mr. Science Theater 3000. But other people think of like, you know, King Kong and Son of Kong, which was always played in New York on WOR, and Babes in Toyland was actually played too. And that's one of the things, that's a major thing growing up is, I mean, I've seen King Kong 100 times maybe, you know, my life. Son of Kong a lot less. I'm not going to lie. I'm not as big a fan of Son of Kong as I am of King Kong. But it was one of those things, even though I'd seen King Kong so many times, Thanksgiving Day, I knew at this time King Kong is going to be on Channel 9, WOR, and you watched it, and it became, like a tradition, you know, kind of thing. You watched it, and then after that, Son of Kong will be on. And then the next day, there would be King Kong Escapes, which we, you know, my dad was never as big a fan of, but my brother and I were like, this is awesome, you know. And then another Godzilla movie. Excuse me. Those kind of things are all part of this too. And I just want to, you know, tell people like, reading through, because you actually review and talk about the original King Kong. You talk about Son of Kong. You talk about Dia de Lynch's remake. You talk about all those different things as well, you know, in there.
Yeah. This book actually started out as something totally different, I should confess. Okay. what it actually started out as was I just wanted to do a fun review book of, like, I can't say giant ape movies. There's not really enough giant ape movies, but, like, let's say, like, ape horror movies, ape sci-fi movies, robot monster, gorilla at large, you know, stuff like that. I just wanted to do a review book of all these ape movies. And then I was like, you know, it's still not going to be a big enough book, so what could I beef it up with an appendix? And I thought, well, I could do a Lost Films in the appendix. And as I kept digging, I finally realized there was really enough material to just do a Lost Films book, like a Kong, Giant Apes, Lost Films. And so it's funny, it kind of flip-flops. What I intended to just be an appendix turned into the, like, the main content, which is the Lost Films. But you'll notice there is an appendix in the back of this book that is just a little guide and review to movies that are semi-related to Kong, like Bye Bye Monkey or Shikari, which is like an Indian version of King Kong and stuff like that.
Right, well, yeah. And I think that stuff is great, too, in, you know, as you're going through, like I'm reading through, like I was reading the King Kong stuff, and there's still information there, because again, the research and the digging you did, you know, out there at BYU, you're providing stuff that I didn't know, you know, and I'm like, what? Okay. Like, and I know that, like, obviously, you know, like my dad, like I said to him, I said, Dad, you got to read this book. I said, when I finish it, you got to read it. He's like, all right, I'll read it. And he's like, all right, well, how much more could it tell me? I'm like, besides I said, you got to read just the Kong stuff about the original. I said, there's stuff in here, Dad, I never knew. I said, if I don't know it, there's a chance maybe you didn't know it. And it's just, he's like, oh, you got him there. You hooked him. As soon as I said there might be more, like, you hooked him, you know, kind of thing. And my dad being 30 years older than I am, so he's in his, you know, he's 70, you know, kind of thing. Like, that idea, you hooked him with just the idea there might be Kong information he didn't know. And I said, and there's the sequels and the prequels and, you know, different ideas. He's like, okay. Like, it wasn't a hard sell on a man who loves Kong. So those of us who are listening maybe say, like, oh, man, you know, I like Kong. Okay. I'm telling you, there is so much information that is, to me, interesting. And that I didn't even get it. I mean, I was just reading today about the Legend of King Kong, the one Danforth was trying to get made at the same time as De Laurentiis, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, 70, that's right, the Legend of Kong, right? That's like 77, 76, 77, that time. And I'm reading this going, man, they should have made this movie, you know? You know, and I mean, I get it. You know, it's like whatever legal battle there might have been, but I'm like, man, this movie sounds really good. And of course, I would have loved for it to have been all stop motion. And it's, you know, it's the 70s, so we're getting kind of late. You know, I mean, I know it's Danforth, and you know, there's some people who maybe feel that he never quite was as good. I mean, that he never was able to do the stuff Harryhausen was due. But again, when you're trying to compare yourself to the person who basically, I mean, as much as Willis O'Brien, you know, I mean, pioneered this stuff, the level Ray Harryhausen took stop motion to is, you know, I mean, that's like, that's not even fair. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's hard to compare anyone to do what Harryhausen did in his films, you know, and that's why there's not hundreds of Harryhausen films. That's why there's not hundreds and hundreds of people, you know, who do this. And, you know, it's kind of funny when you look at 1 million BC or 1 million years BC, you know, the Hammer movie, which, you know, and you point this out, that it was supposed to be Hammer's King Kong that doesn't get made, that allows 1 million years BC to happen. And you're like, and people, now that's a movie that people would, I mean, just Raquel Welch alone on the poster, you put a lot of butts in seats, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it's funny because a lot of young men, a lot of young boys became men when they saw that poster, so to speak. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And it's so funny when you realize, when you watch that movie, you're like, oh man, you know, you think like, oh, well, that, what could have been? What could have been a stop motion Harryhausen Kong done in color with Hammer behind it? You know what I'm saying? It kind of reminds
me. Who knows? Maybe Raquel Welch would have been there, and Darrow. Who knows?
Yeah. I mean, she fits the role, you know? And to be honest with you, it's always like, what is, I'm trying to remember, is it Nessie, right? Was that the name of it? The Hammer Toho production that never happened, right?
Yeah.
That my brother talks about that all the time, going, well, you know, and it's like, because we were, we actually covered on The Vault, the horror podcast, we actually covered The Legend of the Seven Golden Vampires, which was a Shaw Brothers Hammer crossover, which if you've never seen it, folks, it needs to be seen to be believed. It is, you know, it is a full blown, like, you don't want to say kung fu movie, but that's what it is basically, and a Dracula movie mashed together. So.
Oh, I love it. I love it. It's one of my favorites. Absolutely.
Yeah. Blu-ray's coming, and I actually have the Blu-ray on order, and I'm like, you know, for years, I mean, not that the DVD was atrocious, but you can tell it needs to be cleaned up, you know what I'm saying? Like, the DVD is almost 20 years old, and I'm like, I can't wait for a Blu-ray, you know. But you realize that, like, these movies that didn't have, you're like, oh, that would have been really cool. You know, that would have been really something. But, excuse me, we, you know, we got 1 Million Years B.C., which, let's be honest, there's not that many Harryhausen movies, and that movie has some of the dinosaur work, and that movie is just, you know, amazing. You know what I'm saying? Like, even the giant turtle, you know, you look at that and you're going, I mean, that could be a real turtle. And it's not, obviously, it's stop motion. You're like, man, it's just so good. And then when you watch what Danforth did with When Dinosaurs Ruled the Earth, and it's good, but you can tell it's not at that Harryhausen level. To see Kong done that way, even Danforth doing the Kong, even if it was, and I know they wanted to do guy in a suit and stop motion. I don't know how that would have worked. I think that would have been a mess.
Yeah, you know? I do too. I do as well.
Just saying. But I mean, think about that. I mean, if you, that, the chance that that might have existed, like, oh, because again, I am not a huge fan of the De Laurentiis remake. And it's not so much on Rick Baker and that stuff like that. I don't really care for the changes they made to the characters and how they, you know, modernized certain things and did change other things around and whatever. And, but again, that's personal preference. And but I think what we got there was, I mean, it's fine, but then there's a reason why King Kong 1933 still holds up to this day, man, you know? And I mean, that movie, you know, it goes, when you watch Kong now, it never lets up, it never stops, it keeps going. So the other nice part is too, I was going through looking at some of the things, the idea of the sequel, I shouldn't say remake, the sequel for King Godzilla versus King Kong, or King Kong versus Godzilla, you know, that never came to fruition, right? And,
yeah, that was kind of one of my introductions to Lost Kong movies, and it's ironic it comes from Japan instead of America. But yeah, Toho was so excited by the success of King Kong versus Godzilla. Originally, the next movie was just going to be a rematch. That was it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and it's funny when you think about it. Is and this is something that has been brought up. I know Luke talks about it on his show on Earth Destruction Directive, the Daikaiju podcast, how popular King Kong was in Japan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know,
and how influential. And it's crazy to think about it, because Godzilla is such a, or, you know, or Gojira, you know, whichever version you want to talk about, you know, kind of thing. Godzilla in general is such a iconic character, such a big, you know, not to be, you know, tongue in cheek here, but larger than life. Cause Godzilla is larger than life, but there is no Godzilla without King Kong. And to be honest, King Kong, even if you've never seen the 1933 version, you know who King Kong is. King Kong is like Santa Claus, or, you know, he's, you know, someone who, it's bigger than life. You know, the legend is so much bigger than anything you can even imagine, that you don't even have to know about it to know about it, you know? And to think that how influential King Kong was on in Japan, and how big it was there to spawn, you know, Godzilla, you know, in a way, you know, kind of create that idea. And then the third movie out is King Kong versus Godzilla. And I know,
yeah,
you know, like, they're like, well, we're going to do this. And I'm like, let's do it again. I'm like, yeah, let's do it again. I would, it's one of those things, you know, some movies do, as we say, it does what it says on the outside of the tin. Like, it does what it says on the outside of the box. King Kong versus Godzilla, as much as you might, you know, whether you, well, you know, and again, some people don't love the Kong design. Some people get mad because his arms change length or whatever, whatever you're, you know, whatever it might be, that movie gives you, you know, at the end, King Kong fighting Godzilla. And it doesn't get better than that, man. So, and then, of course, but what does that lead to? You know, obviously, you know, eventually they hook up at Rankin Bass, and then they give you King Kong Escapes, which gives you arguably my favorite character of all time, Mechani Kong. I mean, I don't know about you, but I love Mechani Kong. In fact, if they made a movie where Mechani Kong fought Titanosaurus, I would be so happy. Two characters that are like never going to be seen ever again, or whatever. Uh-huh. You know? But you know what? I mean, think about that. Mechani Kong, without Mechani Kong, you don't get Mecha Godzilla. And you point out in the book. And I was like, oh my God, really? I know that though. And I'm like, but I never thought about it that way. Without Mechani Kong, which is wildly popular. Mechani Kong is, you know, again, crazy popular still to this day. And he's only ever appeared in one movie, you know, kind of thing. So, but Mechagodzilla, I mean, Mechagodzilla's been in, what, 4 or 5 different Godzilla movies, you know? And again, I think it would be really cool that there would be a time when eventually you would see, you know, Godzilla fight Mechani Kong, which we never got. Again, that was another proposed movie and we never got it. Or at some point, maybe Mechani Kong and Mechagodzilla in the same film, which I know is not going to happen, but like, man, like the possibilities, you know what I'm saying? So, but,
and this is like the problem with King Kong and Mechani Kong, especially the rights are so murky because technically Rankin Bass created Mechani Kong, who appeared in a Toho film, thus Toho thought that they owned Mechani Kong for a while, and then to their shock when they went to make Godzilla vs. Mechani Kong and they discussed the reality of it, they learned, oh, no, we actually don't own Mechani Kong. I guess, I believe Turner said they owned Mechani Kong at the time because he was so similar to King Kong.
Hmm. Well, the other thing I found interesting, too, was the debate over, did Marion C. Cooper own King Kong? Did RKO own King Kong? Did is it owned by who owned the book rights compared to who, like, because the, like, the, you know, like the different Loveless wrote the book. It's like it's like what, like, this is crazy, you know, kind of thing. And to be honest, that's what I again, it ties up sometimes. It's a shame because, as somebody who, and again, this is the artist in me talking, you want to see the art produced. And again, this is art. I mean, film is art, you know, it's just like, you know, painting or anything else. It's a different form of art. I want to see this. I mean, there are people who would love, plenty of people would pay good money to watch this.
Yeah.
But, you know, it becomes, you know, lawyers fighting and tying things up. I mean, what the thing with The Legend of King Kong, that lawsuit lasted almost till 1980. We're talking something that started in 1976.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just crazy, crazy stuff. And, if folks, and I know we're kind of talking about different things, and you might be like, wow, what are you guys even talking about? It's all in the book. Like, I tell you right now, I'm reading this going, man, I'm learning. Like, and that's the great part about this, too. I love learning about things that interest me. I think that's sometimes one of the, my friend Nicole, who she had said this, that if you don't love to read, you haven't found the right book yet, you know, kind of thing like that. Like, you know, if you don't enjoy learning, reading, even if you're reading for pleasure or whatever kind of thing, you haven't found the right thing yet. You know, you haven't found the right thing that speaks to you. And I love, reading, let's say, like something about, like, you know, history of the Yankees or something like that, you know, kind of thing like that, about, like, you know, the 61 Yankees or something like that, because that's something I'm interested in. I found this, I'm reading this, and I'm like chewing through a chapter, like, well, page to page after page after page, like, oh, it's going quick. You know, like, when you don't feel like, you know, when you're looking, like, how many pages left? Oh, man, there's only, like, you know, 50 pages left. Man, only 50 left, you know, not like, man, I'm like, how much longer I got to read this book, you know what I'm saying? I think that's a great testament to, interesting material, writing that I think is relatable. I don't think you are trying to, I'm trying to remember. McFarlane puts out books sometimes that are like, you know, where they're trying to, like, talk over your head. The author's trying to act like they're better than you. And it's like, dude, like, you're writing about giant bugs in the 50s. Like, stop.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't mean that in a bad, I mean, I'm not trying to demean what you're doing. I mean, I think you're writing in a way that as a reader, it's engaging. I want to take it in. I want to read this, and I don't feel like it's a chore. That's great.
Thank you. I really appreciate that.
So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's hard because, as somebody who doesn't, I mean, I've never written anything beyond like, you know, like an article or something like that where it's, you know, that's been published kind of thing. I couldn't imagine putting together, you know, even 10, 15, 20 pages, you know what I'm saying? That kind of thing, and make it all like that someone actually want to read it. You know, you're putting together, you know, books that are, you know, several hundred pages, and it's like, man, like, okay, you know, I want more, you know, kind of thing. And the great part is, and I think you and I just speaking about this before we got on the air, you know, obviously you have your, we talked about the Lost Kaiju films and the Tosusaka films, like kind of thing. But you also did two books where it's all the Kaiju films, like, I forget the years. Like one was like, it was like a chunk of years, like, and then it's a chunk of years up to the current, right?
Yeah, there were two different eras called Showa and Heisei, and so I did, the first one was like 1954 to 1982, and then the next one's like 84 to 2017.
There we go. Yeah, okay. I didn't remember the years. I'll be honest with you, because I don't have it open in front of me, but that those, again, you know, if you're into giant monsters, and again, we do have some people who do crossover. You know, they like big bugs, but they also kind of do like their giant monsters too. You know what I'm saying? Those are great books too. You know, you start reading, and again, and those films are, again, maybe there are things, you know, but again, you're reading through it, you're finding out information. It's a lot of stuff that's very interesting. And to me, that's kind of great because, again, I have all the Blu-rays and everything like that, and they're all sitting here, and I always loved, you know, my giant monsters, but I certainly don't know them as in depth as some people do. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, my brother might know, or you know, or even people my brother has spoken with, you know, other authors that he's had on who are all about, you know, like serious about their, you know, Daikaiju and know their stuff much more in depth than I do. I know I enjoy a movie. I know Rodan's on. I'm like, ooh, Rodan's on. I got to watch this, or War of the Gargantuas, because let's face it, like, War of the Gargantuas is pretty freaking good. You know, yeah, what I'm saying? Right? I don't think I've ever met anybody who doesn't like that movie. I'm just throwing it out there to you. Anybody who knows it, they're like, I'm not a big fan of War of Gargantuas. Like, War of Gargantuas, like, oh, War of the Gargantuas. You know, kind of thing. Like, it's so different. And if you think about it, that falls in this kind of Kong world-ish, you know, kind of thing. I mean, they're much closer to a, like, not even though they're not gorillas, I understand that. It kind of falls more in this world than it would into the reptile or, you know, dinosaur world. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and actually in foreign countries, it was advertised as a King Kong movie because they were close enough in appearance they could kind of get away with it.
Yeah. Wow, that's interesting. And again, and that's always interesting too. You put in there too how movies are marketed overseas, even though they don't have King Kong in them at all.
Yeah.
You know, like they put King Kong on it. King Kong, let's go. They get there and it's like, what's this? You know, thing. So.
Well, it's funny, you said you like Titanosaurus, and in the German dub, Titanosaurus, his name is Titano Kong, believe it or not.
Oh. Wow, I did not know that. I'll be honest with you, that's great. I do love Titanosaurus. Terra Mechagodzilla was on yesterday on Retro, and my daughter's here. She goes, what are you watching? I'm like, watch, Titanosaurus is on here. She's like, okay, Dad, calm down. Like, you know, the 8-year-old, like, she's going on 40. You know, she's like, calm it down, Dad. What do you mean? I'm like, it's Titanosaurus. She goes, all right, never seen this before. Is he in anything else? I'm like, no, it's the only one he's in. And she's like, all right. Like, she just is so like, okay, Dad, like, it's okay. Like, I'm like, yeah. Like, she doesn't get nearly excited as I do for that, you know, because, and it was in English, which is very rare for Retro. I was like, it's in English. I don't have to even read the subtitles here, you know? but yeah, I mean, that stuff is great. So one other thing I wanted to mention here, and I know you've written other books outside of the giant monster kind of thing. The one that jumped out to me was your one about the spaghetti Westerns, the gooder, the bad, I mean, the I don't have the head in front of me. I don't have the title right in front of me. I'm sorry.
It's not grammatically correct. That's kind of why I like the title. It's the goodest, the baddest, and the ugliest spaghetti westerns ever made.
Yeah. And I'll tell you right now, folks, I literally have the Kong book in front of me, and I'm sitting in the wrong place. I don't have all my other books are not here. For those of us who are B-movie fans, depending on our age, some of us are, maybe closer to my dad's age. You would go to the movies and you would see the old westerns, right? They weren't spaghetti westerns, but they were the old westerns, and you'd get a western and a couple horror movies and whatever kind of thing. Me growing up, I didn't watch John Wayne westerns, kind of thing. I didn't watch those kind of things. The westerns I watched had Clint Eastwood in them and, mouths that didn't really match up to what you were seeing. And, kind of thing. And a lot of people going, as they're falling over, getting shot in the stomach, kind of thing. And those spaghetti westerns. And we talk about a lot of times the B-movie aspects. Is it a B-movie if there's not, a giant robot or a monster or something? And of course, yeah, the spaghetti westerns, those are B-movies also. And I know there's a lot of people who have reached out to us and said, hey, you guys talk a lot about this stuff. You ever consider talking about, they're afraid sometimes, like, I'm not sure if this fits. And it's like, yeah, it's a B movie. The spaghetti westerns, The Man with No Name and, that whole trilogy, which is very, very obviously, very famous. The Clint Eastwood ones are very famous, but even the Django movies. I mean, what is there, like 70 or 80 movies that have Django in the title?
Yeah.
Right. Nothing to do with each other, kind of thing. And 100% nothing to do with Quentin Tarantino's movie, kind of thing. But it's so funny when you realize that those B movies can, it doesn't have to be, just a giant tarantula that Clint Eastwood has to shoot with a missile at the end of the movie, giant chickens and rats and whatever that, happen to eat the whatever's coming out of the toxic waste that they're getting infused with, kind of thing, to be a B movie. These movies can be movies that are made, and again, it comes down to your idea. And Dad and I mention this all the time. When a B movie is up for an Academy Award, let alone win one, you're like, oh my God, like it makes me feel proud. When Gladiator won the Academy Award, let's be honest, Gladiator, yes, Ridley Scott's an amazing director and he did a great, and the acting is outstanding and whatever. But Gladiator's a sword and sandal movie, kind of thing. Like, it's a B movie at its heart, it's a B movie. And we were saying, the dad never always said, like, oh man, like, doesn't that, it makes me, again, I mean, Gladiator is one of my favorite movies of all time. And I literally cannot watch that movie without crying the entire time through it. And I didn't even need all the chemo meds to screw up my system to make me cry. Like, it's one of those movies you just cry during, kind of thing. It's funny how those B movies are at its core. And I think what we see, obviously in the stuff that you're bringing to us here in this book and your other books and stuff like that, a love for those kind of films, kind of thing. And even if they're made or unmade, kind of thing, I think people who appreciate that kind of filmmaking, the idea that not everything needs to be, like I said, not everything needs to be Citizen Kane, kind of thing. I can enjoy, the Beast with a Million Eyes, right? As cheesy as that might be, or Gorilla at Large, or whatever, whatever it might be, I can enjoy those films, sit down and kind of enjoy that and get lost in one of those movies. And the nice part is, what you're doing here is you have a lot of, you've hit all the films that kind of fit into the big monkey, kind of quote unquote, kind of thing, as some of people would say. Films, the Queen Kong and the Ape and the things like that are in here too, on Conga, which is so funny because I don't know when you first saw Conga, how old you were when you first saw it.
I was about 12. Yeah.
Okay, so you already seen obviously like so it wasn't like you were like so you already seen other like you had seen other.
Bad movies. I don't like Conga very well, to be honest.
Right. But I'm saying it's like when I saw it as a kid, when we were kids watching it, Michael Goff, who plays just a really despicable person in that movie. We had already seen Horror Dracula. We we had already seen a number of Hammer movies, and I'm like, I know that guy.
Yeah.
Oh, he's kind of a jerk here, you know. You know, it's kind of funny. We always kind of joke about that too, and or like when you watch Gorgo the first time, and you're like, wow, that's, I mean, Gorgo's, the suit work is really well done in that movie, you know, kind of thing. Compared to, we grew up, I mean, when I saw Gorgo, and I had already seen Harryhausen stuff, so I knew what stop motion looked like, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's not stop motion, but that's pretty good.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Because, you know, so, but I'll be honest, is, folks, if I haven't sold you on buying it and on checking this book out, I don't know what else I can tell you. I mean, it is well worth your time. I bought it the other day, and I'll tell you, yeah, I've been reading it every day. I've been going through, and we were talking about this. The writing is, it draws you in. You know, you start reading, and all of a sudden you realize, like, oh, I just read like 20 pages. Like, I'm totally, you know, popping through this. And there's great pictures throughout. There's movies in here that maybe you haven't seen. I know some people, like maybe people haven't seen The Mighty Peking Man or Ape or things like that. You might be like, wow, that's a real movie. Like, that's what gets me sometimes. Like, we reading this going, oh, this movie, oh, this was made. I forgot this is a real movie. I've seen this movie, you know, kind of thing. And, you know, you start, it's engaging, and it draws you in. And if you enjoy this book, I'm telling you right now, check out the other ones too. If you're into your giant monsters, you're into your Daikaiju, you're into your tokusatsu, like, there's stuff there for you, and you're into your spaghetti westerns and, you know, kind of stuff. I can't recommend them. I mean, I have them. I've actually sent them to Luke as presents for birthdays and Christmas and stuff like that. So if I'm willing to buy a book and then buy another copy of the book to send to somebody else, it means I have to believe in it. You know what I'm saying? So, so the thing is this, Sean, again, one thing I wanted to ask you, and again, we're a little off, you know, the Kong stuff here. If you were to think, what, and I hate to put you on the spot, do you have like a favorite B movie that you were like, you know, is your movie?
That's tough, because there's a lot of them I really, really like. For some reason, I really like Dracula AD 1972. I don't know why. I know a lot of people don't like it. It's one I just really like.
That'll be honest, folks, that's not the answer I was thinking. That's great, though. I mean, you know, what's funny is because there's, you know, Dracula AD 72, and then was it Satanic Rites of Dracula, right? That's the other one that takes place in the modern day. Right there,
yeah.
Right back to back. Dracula AD 72 is the one people kind of, because that was the one that it's not in the public domain. Satanic, for some reason, Satanic Rites of Dracula is in all those sets and whatever. People misremember a lot of times. They're like, oh, I seen that one. And they tell you about it. They tell you about Satanic Rites of Dracula. You're like, nope, that's the wrong movie. You know, kind of thing. So that's actually a really good movie. He kind of got me there. I literally was thinking, like, I'm like, it's gonna come up, but like, because we talk about, you know, movies like Them, or, you know, like The Beast and Toy the Other Fathoms or things like that. But yeah, that's a great one right there. I mean,
yeah. Well,
I'll be honest with you, we have not covered that, and when we come up on, we figure we come up on an anniversary, or maybe we make a special occasion, maybe we have to have you back to talk about said movie. That might be an interesting conversation.
Sure, man. I don't really like. I'm not really a Hammer expert. I don't know much about their pre-production. And
oh, you don't have to.
Yeah,
that's the great part about it. You don't have to know any of that stuff. But, I mean, when Dad and I dig sometimes into, like, I mean, some movies get real dug into. King Kong, 3 hours, the podcast. You know, we literally could watch King Kong twice and the special features.
Yeah,
you know, and that what Dad and I do, because we spend a lot of time on it, but. You know, Dad and I, a lot of times we will try to, you know, hit movies, and we talk about some of the, you know, the production stuff that goes into it, and like, you know, who did makeups and who did effects, and, you know, like the writing teams and stuff like that. But, you know, if it's a movie you enjoy, and it'll come across, and you know, people hear that, and that's important. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's what I think that's what our listeners are listening for. That, you know, that love of the film and enjoying what we're, you know, doing. So, but again, I'm not trying to pressure you, like, oh, you're coming back on and doing this, you know. But, you know, you hit me with a movie, I'm like, oh, we definitely haven't covered that. Like, if you had said, yeah, my favorite movie of all time is, you know, Jason and the Argonauts. I'm like, okay, like we covered, you know.
Yeah.
And again, and to be honest is, you know, sometimes those Hammer movies, especially some of the later ones, and I don't know, how much you enjoy the, like the Karstein trilogy and things like that. Some of the Hammer movies, like to me, Hammer, like Horror Dracula might be the best Dracula movie of all time, period. You know what I'm saying? Like just overall Dracula film. And some people argue like, oh, how can you say that? Like, it's gotta be Bela Lugosi's Dracula. But you know, but I also kind of like Christopher Lee as Dracula better than I like Bela Lugosi. And you're not supposed to say things like that because that's like heresy. But
yeah,
again, it's my opinion, and you know, people share that stuff. So,
well, if you really want to get into some heresy, why don't you ask me what my favorite King Kong movie is?
Uh oh, folks, here we go. So, what is your favorite Kong movie?
King Kong Lives. I love it. That's probably the one I've seen more than the other ones. I know it's like the most hated, bottom of the barrel Kong movie for everybody, but that's actually my favorite.
I'd be honest with you, I don't think I've seen that in probably 20 years.
How?
I don't know if I even own it. I'm trying to think, like, I don't know if I even own a copy. We had it on VHS. Like, we had it on a VHS. I don't know if I own, I definitely don't have a Blu-ray of it. I don't even, is it even on Blu-ray?
You know, no. Actually, King Kong 76 is not on Blu-ray either. It's on Blu-ray in Japan, but
yeah,
not here. So.
Oh, I know. That came up the other day. I was like, wait, on Blu-ray? I'm like, oh, that's from Japan. Yeah. That's not going to work here. I was hoping it was an Umbrella put it out. Umbrella is the Australian company. And even though their stuff says, like, region B only, it's always all region. That's how I scored the Vincent Price volume one of the Vincent Price collection, which has Theater of Blood and Abominable Dr. Fives and Five Rise Again and like all these classics that you can't get on Blu-ray any other way. It's an Umbrella release. I'm like, oh, is this an Umbrella? No. So, but King Kong Lives is on DVD for sure.
Yeah, I don't remember. It's out of print on DVD, but I do have it. Yeah.
Hey, folks, you know what? I'll be honest with you is, when King Kong Lives came out, I remember it coming out in the theaters and being really amped that it was coming out because, again, it's Kong, right? And my dad going, I don't know, because you know, again, if you're not a fan of the De Laurentiis movie, you kind of might feel burned by that. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's a lot of people who really, you know, let's use the word, hate the De Laurentiis version of Kong, and because it's not the original. And again. Just because something exists doesn't mean the other one had to go away. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not like because De Laurentiis made his version of Kong that the originals didn't have to exist anymore. But I know people who were very adamant when Kong Skull Island was coming out that they were not going to watch it because we're not watching this. That's not King Kong. And Dad and I saw Kong Skull Island opening weekend, IMAX, and it blasts you to the seats, you know, kind of thing. Like, it's just like, what are we, like, this is crazy. And that movie holds up, you know, at repeated viewings. You know what I'm saying? Sometimes you watch a movie like, oh, that was really good. And you watch the second time, you're like, that's not great. You know, kind of thing. To me, Kong Skull Island, they nailed it. They hit a home run there, you know, kind of thing, trying to keep it. And again, keeping it more in a modern, quote unquote, modern day. It's the 70s, I know. But, you know, I'm excited for, I mean, don't get me wrong, Godzilla King of the Monsters, I can't wait for that to happen, but I want that to happen already and get done with so I can buy the Blu-ray of it so I can get on to the King Kong versus Godzilla.
Yeah.
You know, kind of thing. I want Godzilla King of the Monsters to do amazing business, make $1 billion. Let me buy the Blu-ray. Great. Let's get to the King Kong one because I want to see what's going to happen there too. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think they did a great job with Skull Island. I think they did a great job with the first Godzilla movie. This one looks crazy. I mean, the effects look nuts. Man, hit me with two titles I didn't think right there. And you know what? That's great though, dude. But that's what makes this good though. So,
Let me ask you, what unmade Kong movie that's listed in my book, like which unmade Kong movie do you think you wish had been made?
Well, I'll be really honest, as much as I would love to have seen Godzilla versus Mechanicong, because I think that would be really cool. I think if Danforth had been able to do the stop motion for Kong, the legend of King Kong, or like the one from like this in the 70s there, might have been the best one. Because just reading through how they're trying to keep it different, because he's fighting three Triceratops instead of the whatever. I think that would have been the one that really would have been like, oh yeah, it's really good. Like I think people would have been like, okay, we could buy into that.
Yeah.
That to me sounds really interesting. There are a few in there though that you're like, oh man, like you like it kind of has the skeleton of a really good idea. But you kind of know that it wouldn't have kind of hit as well, you know?
Yeah, like Space Kong. I think if it's Space Kong been made, that would have been bad.
You know what, though? I bet you to make a hell of a comic book, though.
Yeah.
That's what it screams to me. It's comic book. You know what I'm saying? Like, you kind of look sometimes. I mean, I think The Legend of King Kong would have been something else if Danforth had done the effects. But there's still a place in me saying, Jay, you know you want another Mechanicong. Like, I mean, to me, I'm all for putting Mechanicong in, you know, if Toho could somehow put that, Toho could put that in anything. If somehow in Shin Godzilla, at the end, Mechanicong just showed up, holy crap, you know, that has nothing to do with the movie. It doesn't matter, you know. So, all right, folks, I mean, it's been great talking with you, John, you know. Your book is outstanding. The other books are outstanding too. Thank you very much for coming on and talking about this stuff. Now, if people want to actually purchase the book, now that we've talked all about it, and where can they get it?
Easiest is just on Amazon. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So just type in Kong Unmade on Amazon. It should pop up pretty easy. Or search my author page, John LeMay. That's LEMAY. And all my books will pop up on Godzilla and Spaghetti Westerns and everything else.
Awesome. And like John had mentioned, is that you buy the hard, you know, the physical copy of the book, right? And then you get the Kindle version on the price match or whatever they call that thing. I forget what it's called, but you go into your Kindle and it says, like, instead of being $4.99, it'll say, you know, 0.000 or you buy it. And I'll be honest, I have the books I purchased. I have obviously the Kindle versions to go with them. And it's nice. Again, the Kindle version makes it really easy. If I have my Kindle with me, I don't have the actual book with me. I can always read some and then kind of advance my bookmark in the book, you know, kind of thing. And I will do is I will definitely include a link right in the show notes, folks. So right on the main page. And I know a lot of you guys use like Podcast Addict or Stitcher or something like that to get your podcast. But and if you go to the main Two True Freaks website, I'll have a link right there. Right to Kong Unmade, and you can jump right there. And if you're interested in the other books, just click right on John's name right on the top of the page, and it'll take you right to his author's page. That's actually how I found some of your other stuff. I like because when I bought your first time I bought a book, I'm like, what else has this guy written? Holy cow, you know, kind of thing. Like it becomes, you know, interesting, and you start digging. It's you start going down the rabbit hole, as we say, you know. well worth your time, folks. And again. Some of you guys might be saying, you know, Jay, I don't have a ton of time to read. It's one of the books, you're not going to put it down. You're going to just start going through it. And it's one of those things. I started reading it the other night when the book showed up. And I'm reading and reading, and I'm like, all of a sudden, I'm like, oh, it's been an hour. Okay, I probably should go to bed. You know, kind of thing, like I need to go to sleep, you know. So it becomes something you actually enjoy doing. So John, thank you very much for coming on. You know, I hope to have you, you know, anytime we, you know, we'll the next, and again, I don't want to, you know, give anything away here kind of thing, but if the next, you know, if you're doing another book, next time you have another book or something like that, you know, let me know, you know, in advance, I'll set up time, we'll get you on to promote it, because I think, you know, your writing style is, for me, something I enjoy reading, and hopefully our listeners do too. You know, we'll promote your books, but we'll definitely have you on to talk about some movies too. You know, definitely Dracula 80, 1972. And if I get my hands on King Kong Lives, let me see if I get my hands on a copy of it. Because I'll be honest with you, is I would love to talk to somebody who that's their favorite movie.
Yeah. You know, okay. I'd love to.
Yeah, because that's one of the things too. When we talk about films, I mean, we talked about, you know, Dad and I covered Jason and the Argonauts, which is the movie I'm named after, you know, kind of thing. That's an easy movie for me to talk about. I could talk about Jason and the Argonauts for hours and hours. It's like Seven Voyages of Sinbad. You know what I'm saying? Like, these are easy movies to talk about. And sometimes, you know, I mean, and again, those are movies that are beloved by, I mean, and I haven't really met people who are like, oh, I hate those movies. But, and not to say that I hate King Kong Lives, I just haven't seen that in so long. Dad always says to me, thank you for bringing up this film. You made me watch something I haven't seen in 30 years, you know, or a movie I haven't. And if I haven't seen this movie in at least 20, 25 years, at least that long. I'm trying to think, like, I mean, I remember watching it as a kid a couple times. But I don't know if it's even been available for me to be able to watch, you know, if I mean, kind of thing. The nice part is going back and revisiting one of those movies that, and again, not something that is necessarily like 80 years old, but even, I mean, that's 30 years, right? How old is King Kong Lives? 30 years old, right? Or so?
I believe 1986.
Yeah.
I think it came out 86. Oh, so yeah. God.
Dude, it's over 30. It's just 30 years old, man.
It's crazy.
You know, that's great. You know, can think about like that's something different than that long. That didn't seem that long ago. I mean, Dad and I, when we were talking this year, we covered Leviathan. We're talking about Deep Star 6. Like, those are bringing back, you know, those are like 89. And you're like, oh, 89. Doesn't, to me, 1989 literally is like 5 years ago.
Dad, yeah.
Like, that's 30 years ago, Jay. I'm like, oh. Or we covered Chuck Russell's The Blob. And you're like, oh, Chuck Russell's The Blob. Like, how many years ago was that? It's like, yeah, it's 1988. Well, here's the scary part. We're talking about movies. And it's like, oh, how long ago was that? My dad's like, that was 17 years ago, Dad. He goes, holy cow, 17 years ago. It doesn't seem like it's 17 years ago. It was made, that means it's made in 2001.
Yeah.
You know, 2002. You know, kind of thing. It doesn't seem that long ago. So, anyway, so, but like I said, John, thank you very much for coming on. Folks, if you have any feedback you'd like to send in, shoot me feedback. You know, anything, even if you feel like, I'll pass it on to John. Anything that comes in, John, I'll pass along to you. Because again, our listeners are very passionate about their B movies, and again, we may have listeners who've already read your books and like, I love John LeMay's book, they're great, or thank you so much for bringing this up, and then I will pass it on to you, and then we can, you know, next time we have you on, we'll talk about the feedback and all that stuff like that, and then we'll definitely, you know, give people something, you know, again, we're trying to always give people on Bots, Bugs, and Bays, you try to give people a different experience. I don't like, I mean, I don't always want to do movies like, you know, 1950s only or 1960s only, and you know, and here's a chance we talk about a book that, again, should hopefully be something that a lot of people are interested in doing, in reading, you know, kind of things, broadening our horizons, you know, kind of thing, and you know, so. But thank you very much for coming on and for your time today.
Oh, thanks! I had a blast, and I look forward to coming on again whenever you'll have me. So,
all right, folks. So, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for the downloads and the listens. Again, any feedback, hit us up. So, as we say here, keep those cards and letters coming and keep watching the skies.
This is Tokyo, once a city of 6 million people. What has happened here was caused by a force which, up until a few days ago, was entirely beyond the scope of man's imagination. Tokyo, a smoldering memorial to the unknown. An unknown which at this very moment still prevails and could at any time lash out with its terrible destruction anywhere else in the world.
Hi, folks. Luke Giaconetti here. I'd like to ask you a few questions. Do you like giant monsters, or as they're called in Japan, Daikaiju? Monsters like Godzilla, Rodan, Gamera, King Ghidorah, or Mothra? Do you like more obscure monsters, such as Gappa or Yangari? Do you like giant heroes like Ultraman or super robots like the Shogun Warriors? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then I think you might like my podcast, Earth Destruction Directive. I'm a dedicated fan of all things Daikaiju, and I'd like to share that with all of you. Please check out Earth Destruction Directive at TwoTrueFreaks.com. Earth Destruction Directive, where we turn your Daikaiju dreams into city-smashing reality. This has been an episode of Bots, Bugs, and Babes, the B-Movie Podcast. If you'd like to contact me, please email the show at botsbugsbabes@gmail.com. If you'd like to find me online, I'm on Facebook under my name, Jason Giaconetti. I often contribute to the Two True Freaks Facebook group. You can visit my Facebook page, The Art of Horror Collective, and you can search the hashtag The Art of Horror Collective. On Instagram, find me under my name, Jason Giaconetti, and search the hashtag The Art of Horror Collective, as well as the new hashtag Bots, Bugs, Babes Podcast. I'm the only one using them. I'm also on Twitter at Jason Giaconetti, and you can visit my webpage at www.theartofhorrorcollective.wordpress.com. All movies, characters, stories, music, etc. are properties of their respective holders. This is a fan work, and any use of any property is purely for review, discussion, entertainment. So don't sue me. I ain't got anything anyway.
There is no tomorrow! There is no tomorrow! There is no tomorrow!
Will you stop?